And I'm like, you're all pedophiles. And they're like, no, see, the difference is...
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we discuss aesthetic beauty. What makes something beautiful to you? And does religion's contributions to aesthetic beauty mitigate its damage?
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, and I am joined, as always, by my husband, Nick Glover.
Hi.
And Tim Wick.
I am not her husband.
Not my husband.
That's
not
true.
Someone else's husband.
I am.
And we're here to talk about just aesthetics and religion and the idea of man-made beauty versus natural beauty and a whole bunch of stuff.
And God.
Yes, and God. And
involved
not God.
Involved in beauty.
Yes.
By natural beauty, you mean like women that don't shave their armpits.
Yes, and like big, firm, floppy tits. Like just like they're,
wait,
they're real.
Firm and floppy?
Yes, firm and floppy because they have that natural flop, but when you touch them, they're firm.
Wow, This is totally not the direction I thought you were going with this.
Anyway, so this all spawned out of, I was telling a story during our downtime between recordings once about the first, so when I went to St. Kate's, that was where I went to college, and my mom went there. I was a legacy or a duplicate, so I got a really good deal on my tuition.
St. Kate's is a college in the Twin Cities for
it's a college. It's a college in the Twin Cities. It used to be the College of St. Catherine. It's now University of St. Catherine, and it's a women's-only college. And when my mom went there in the 70s, they used to still lock the gates at night to keep everybody in. And when I went there, they no longer locked the gates, but they were very, very strict about rules, about visitors, things like that. So it was very much still a Catholic college. My freshman year, there were 4 vacuums available for us to use, and they were named Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So,
oh, the Beatles.
Yes, the Beatles, yes. the members of Coldplay. No, it was really good. And I was a Wiccan at the time. So I went to college.
We had conversations about how you went through the Wiccan phase.
In my senior year of high school, I became a Wiccan, and I was really into it because it was my last gasping attempt at believing in something and feeling something good. And also it was my little tiny rebellion. I dyed my hair black. And I was a Wiccan, and I went by the name Kat, because my middle name is Catherine, so everyone had to call me Kat. And,
Wow. Did you...
You were revealing a lot of embarrassing information about yourself.
Oh, I know.
Did you watch The Craft?
God,
did that just change your world, or...?
No, but I loved that movie. Like, I loved it. Thought it was
Mister,
awesome.
We are the weirdos.
Yes.
Hope you have a picture from that period, and we can
I used to wear black PVC pants, very tight black PVC pants, and I was in improv comedy back then, so it might be... Sure. But I actually do have a picture. All right, so anyway, I was in freshman year at St. Kate's. This was the first year they did this, and they still do it today. You have to take a class called The Reflective Woman, which is a freshman kind of catch-all. It's meant to be like kind of to gauge the abilities, because we're all coming from different high schools. We're all coming from different rural areas and urban areas. So to teach you how to write a paper and how to review something and learning about yourself. And one of the first things you do in the class is do a collage and about things that meant to you. And I did a word collage, which I thought was really inventive, but it was because I didn't have any magazines to cut up. So I just wrote words. Uh-huh. And I have a big vocabulary, so very, you know, very grandiloquent words. And and so everyone knew I was a Wiccan.
Uh-huh.
I was very out. Very out as a Wiccan. And we were in this class, and the task for the day had been to come up with an example of aesthetic beauty and bring it in and talk about it.
Okay.
So most people had just, you know, pieces of, you know, objet d'art and things like that. But this one girl had, she had a picture of a sunset, and she said, I brought this to represent the sunset because sunsets are beautiful and they make me feel peaceful, and they are one of the aesthetic things that I think is just beautiful in the world. And the professor, who was just a fucking asshole, was like, nope, F, you fail, not aesthetic. And this girl's like, okay, why? He's like, Well, I'm sorry. Let me just make sure. Are you talking about that photograph or about sunsets in general? And she's like, oh, sunsets in general. He goes, yep, F, you fail. Sunsets are not created to be beautiful, and therefore they don't have aesthetic beauty.
Okay.
Right? So okay. That's just fucking wrong, first of all, but whatever. Like, that was... So I raised my hand and said, I guess I'm confused. I thought that, you know, I'm like, you're a Christian. And the girl's like, I am. I'm like, so I thought Christians believed that God made the world. And everyone's kind of like, And I'm like, all right. So that means God made the sunset, made each sunset, like for man, you know, for you to enjoy, like, because there's no other purpose. It's just beautiful. So that is a man or you know, a purposefully created thing for aesthetic beauty. So there's intent behind it, and therefore it should qualify for this assignment. And the teacher said to me, you don't even believe in God, so you don't get to talk. And one of the other girls, God bless her. No, one of the other girls says, she believes in God. She just believes in a goddess and multiple aspects of other things represented as gods, like lots of gods, right? I'm like, that is correct. Thank you. Like, thank you, Chrissy. Like, that's good. And then the teacher's like, I don't care. If you're not going to believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ as the Son of God, you can get out of my classroom because you're not speaking anymore.
Wow.
And I thought he was kind of kidding. And I'm like, oh. And he's like, I'm not kidding. Get out. So I took up all my stuff and left. And I came back the next day. And no, I was out of the class. And wow. And so... My choices were, luckily I was still within the drop ad. I had to pay a little money to drop it, but otherwise I could take an F. That was my other choice.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God, yep. What a fuck.
I wasn't allowed back in the room, so I was going to have to get an F. He wasn't going to take any of my papers. He made this very clear. And I tried to appeal it, but he had tenure. And as you can imagine, at a Catholic college, the Wiccan religion isn't really a protected class. Yeah. So no one wanted to help me there. But what it got me...
That's fucked up on a lot of different levels.
It's really stuck with me all these years. This idea that, you know...
Do you remember his name? Can we give
no,
our listeners
his
email
address? No, I honest to God don't remember his name.
Seriously,
it's
no,
been 17 years.
Well, and if the guy had tenure, he's probably old as fuck and he's done now. But yeah. I mean, the thing is that... It's terrible that he can have, because it's a required class.
It is a required
class. And he was torpedoed.
I had to take it as a senior. It was really easy.
Yeah, I bet. And it wasn't with him. But he was torpedoing your ability to excel because of his own prejudice.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And no one cared. And they apologized. They apologized to me. I shouldn't say no one cared. They cared. They were very apologetic.
They didn't care enough to do anything about it.
They didn't care enough to do anything about it. They were very apologetic, but I still had to pay the 10% fee
and the thing
to drop
is even
the class.
The thing is, even if... they should have waived the fee.
Yes.
That's fucking bullshit.
Yes.
But even if... Because you couldn't have gone back to the class. Even if they forced... Even if he hadn't had tenure and they'd gone to the professor and they'd said, no, you have to fucking teach her, you fucking asshole. It wouldn't have mattered because he would have failed you.
Yes.
He would have come up with reasons to fail you, even if you'd done every single assignment to the best of your ability, better than anybody else in that class.
I'm really surprised your mom didn't go all lawyer on their asses.
My mom was not happy with me at this time because I had come out as bisexual and a Wiccan in about 6 month span. And she was very angry with me and I was ruining... what she thought of as her image. She was a different woman back then, my mom. She was,
Molly's mom, we're glad you're better.
She doesn't listen. She was very into the status and the high power of being a VP, living in Eden Prairie and all that.
Sure.
And also, she didn't believe me. And she was right about the Wicca. I mean, she didn't believe that I believed it.
Sure.
And so, my family's reaction to such things is kind of just to be really derisive and, like, rude. Mm. And so, she didn't really care.
Yeah.
She didn't really care.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's messed up. So, but we're getting back to the concept of aesthetics,
yes.
Right?
Yes. But what it led me to thinking about was how I always say very vocally, we all do, I would think, on this podcast, say that we feel religion is damaging.
Yeah.
I mean, as a whole,
absolutely.
Religion is damaging. Yeah. And therefore,
and dangerous.
We'd be better off without it. The one caveat I will make to that, and I'm wondering if you guys agree, is like churches. And like the
religious
architecture,
art.
Yeah, and religious art, and
I see. I'll agree that there is beautiful religious art, absolutely.
Yeah,
but I would say that without religion, those artists would have probably been doing some other art.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a tough. Yeah, I
The reason they did a religious art is because it's the only kind of art allowed.
But would there have been? But
you can paint Jesus or go fuck yourself in a jail cell.
Now, but in terms, okay, so now let's instead of painting, let's talk about the architecture because that's the serious money.
All right, yeah.
Architecture is the real money. So would that architecture have existed without the crazy money of the church?
Well,
going towards it, who would have had that money?
Government
instead
of
royalty.
Instead of being a testament to God and his divinity or whatever the fuck, it would be state buildings. Mm-hmm. It would be wealthy people's homes. And if you look at like the French royalties' summer homes and shit where they'd have huge grand ballrooms in their smallest homes and things like that.
Or the minor castles in Scotland.
Right. Exactly.
Here's what I'm going to say. I was my wife and I went to Italy for our 20th anniversary. We spent a week in Rome and then we went to Florence and. I saw some amazing churches. We went to St. Peter's Basilica, which is fucking amazing. I mean, it's huge. Especially
considering the tech they had at the time.
Sure.
That's what always blows my mind.
And of course, as a non-believer, as an atheist, it pisses me off in one way because I look at all the money that the Catholic Church puts into this shit, and I'm like,
how many people starved that year?
What if they were putting the money into something that actually was mattered? But at the same time, from an architecture standpoint, history, and from a pleasing to the eye standpoint, I mean, you know, you go in there and you see Michelangelo's Pieta, and it's just like, people talk about this as being a great work of art, and you don't really understand great works of art, the things that people call great works of art, until you see it, and you look at it and you go, holy fuck, that really is amazing. The picture, no picture can really make you understand it until you're standing there looking at it, and would Michelangelo have been able to create that kind of art if he hadn't have been creating it about God? And the answer is yes, absolutely. But would he have been able to at the time?
Yeah, with the resources and organization.
No.
On the other hand, I've also, when right out of high school, my family went to Europe and we went to France and I saw some of the French chateaus. And so we're talking about money. We're talking about architecture and beauty from wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That shit was gaudy as fuck. And
because it's someone's pet project.
It was really kind of cool, but at the same time, when you look at the kind of things that wealth creates, you know, the super opulent mansions that wealthy people create or that kings create, typically the stuff in there that's beautiful is when they paid somebody else to actually produce something beautiful, and the stuff that's in there that's just because they wanted it is ugly and stupid.
I wonder how many of the artists were believing it, and how many of the artists were looking for a paycheck, not even looking for a paycheck the way we think of that as like wanting luxury goods, but more like looking to live and clothe their children.
Or to have their ideal career.
Yeah.
I want to be an artist. I want to produce art. I want to make a living doing that. Yeah. I have to do church art.
And at the time, wealthy people, you know, especially in Rome, if you were really wealthy, what you needed to do was build a fucking church.
Right.
Every church.
Because the church was a money making machine.
Sure. and if you were a pope, you had to build a church.
You just
in Rome.
Turn poor people into money, and that's what churches do.
Exactly.
It's like a sausage grinder. I mean, they take thousands and thousands of poor people and turn them into a small profit for you, and it's great.
So religion produced beautiful things.
Yes.
The question is,
does it excuse it?
Does that excuse the horrible things that religion? I mean, we're talking the dark. Well, of course it can't.
Of course it can't excuse, but does it mitigate?
No.
So you think it would be worthwhile to give up the art to get less? Because I mean, the thing is, if we think about it, erase religion.
Give up is inaccurate. That's false. Replace with what would happen instead,
which is an unknown.
Right.
See, and I like that. I think I feel like I would love to see the art, the architecture. Well, I mean, because the pyramids are just religious buildings.
Sure.
And so,
so is the majority of the forum in Rome. Yes, you know, and the Greek, and a lot of the Greek stuff too. Most of those buildings are old temples.
Unfortunately, it all got sacked and burned and destroyed by the Christians. But that's just...
Oh, yeah. The great thing about Rome, the thing that I love about Rome is that all of these churches, basically what they did, so they didn't have to build their own columns and shit to hold up their churches, is they just took the columns from the old Roman temples. Yeah. And some of these churches you will walk into, there was one church where we walked into it and we looked, and I mean, they're like... 50, 60 columns in this church, not a single one was identical to any other one. You could tell that they took every single one of those columns.
Were they all the three kinds? Did you have like, like the Ionic, the Doric, and the... damn it.
Corinthian.
Corinthian, anyway, thank you. All I could think of was the teeth with the eyes and the mouth from the Kim Sandman. I was like, and the teeth pillars.
Yeah, they had all of them. And that was kind of amazing to look at the way they cannibalized old architecture to create new architecture.
Is the architecture in Amsterdam religious, do you know? That's
Baroque era, most of it, I think. Okay. Is Baroque, so it's Renaissance, Baroque, I think.
Where science was beginning to be valued more.
When you hit Renaissance, Baroque period, then you've got more stuff that's not totally influenced by the church. Right.
Because they were the Enlightenment.
Yes.
I'm a total... Philistine when it comes to art, I guess.
But you love architecture.
Classical art bores the shit out of me.
No, but you love architecture. I've heard you talk about things.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I like it. I think it's pretty. I think...
So what do you mean by classical art? Anything like pre-impressionist era?
Anything pre-1900s. I just don't give a fuck about.
So you don't like French impressionism either?
I mean, a little bit of pointillism, I guess.
I appreciate.
There's like one dude that did pointillism.
Here's how I feel about that. Like I feel about Prince, and I have a feeling Nick might agree. It's technically very awesome. It doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
I appreciate the skill and the contribution to the scene.
Yeah.
But I don't.
So by Prince, you mean the artist formerly known as an unbreakable symbol?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
I like.
He's talented. I like him.
Pop art. I like some modern art. I like Treachery of Images, Son of Man. I like Warhol.
You like modern art.
I don't like Molly. You don't like black and white movies.
I'm with you. No, I totally understand how you feel about it.
It's exactly that sort of thing.
And there's no reason. It's just an aesthetic preference. It's an aesthetic preference.
Classic art. Even I mean the closest I can get to like really liking what I'll just call old art will be like Da Vinci. Sketches and drawings and maybe a few paintings where it's like there's some math behind it, there's some neat stuff behind it, but even then I don't feel like I'm appreciating the art. I feel like I'm appreciating the cleverness of the creation or the underpinnings of the art. I don't look at it and go, wow.
All right, so
that's gorgeous.
Apologies, because this is the best I can do. The dude in the circle, the Vitruvian man, is that what it is? With the arms
it's not the Vitruvian man. Oh shit!
Isn't it? That is an example of a Da Vinci drawing that I find exceedingly pleasing aesthetically to me, and I don't know if it's the math and if that's my geek logic brain that is responding to that and his precision and the like. When I was a kid, I really, really liked. It is Vitruvian Man. I really liked the drawings in my mom's Grey's Anatomy book.
Yeah.
Of musculature and things like that. I thought those were very beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Which I think that's something interesting. So is there anything you can think of that you find beautiful that maybe is not considered aesthetically beautiful? Can you think of something like
that's hard, you know, because I'm gonna go back to
the I don't
art,
mean like plastic
I love,
bag
I love art from just about any era when it's exceptionally well done. I think the subjects especially
give me some examples of exceptionally well done. I would like to hear what you
well,
think.
Well, the Pieta is a great example, but Michelangelo's sculptures in general I think are amazing. I don't like the Sistine Chapel, for instance. Having been to the Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo was not a painter, and I don't find his figures particularly convincing.
Okay.
So that bugs me, but his sculpture, I think, is fucking amazing.
Did he do the Veiled Woman?
No.
Whose is that? That's insane. There's a sculpture that looks like a woman wearing a veil, and it's made of marble.
Oh. But
it looks like a woman wearing a veil.
My favorite...
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
My favorite thing about that is... Beavis and Butthead in the old Beavis and Butthead cartoon are like they go and they see David, and they're you know, staring at the statue, and the hippie teacher comes up to them and goes, Beavis, Butthead, you know, do you have any, what do you think? How does this make you feel? And one of them says, it's like hard, but it's not like hard. He's like, that's really good, you guys. Like, that's, like, we need to get into it. Like, and it's just like, that's, I don't know, that's how I...
That, but I mean, in every era, there is really, and I love the Impressionist era. I love Monet and Manet and Rodin and all of the artists from that. Well, Rodin's not an Impressionist, that's actually...
I won't deny that it's beautiful to some people, and it's certainly art, and it's obviously... You know, skilled people. It's just not my bag.
Right, sure.
But Nick has a very keen eye, and you have a very distinct like love versus dislike for comic art.
Well, yeah, I think that falls under pop art, modern art.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's not that you. So you say you're a Philistine, but you're not.
No.
Because you have very distinct preferences, and you can voice why you don't like something.
Sure. Well,
you don't just think it's all dumb. You know,
I can voice why I like things easier than I can. Voice why I don't like things. I just find classic art really boring, and just doesn't do anything for me.
And I find any art that's basically when church was controlling art, and the only stuff that was getting produced was basically religious iconography,
or like people's portraits.
This was before even people's portraits, really. I mean, if you go back to the 12th, 13th century, all they're producing is religious iconography, and there's some really good stuff from that era, but it's pretty fucking boring because it's all really.
Mm-hmm.
Really lockstep the same kind of stuff. There were very talented people producing art, but they weren't able to produce anything extraordinary. And that's where the Renaissance on, it becomes really interesting to watch the progression of art. And one of the things that interests me about Impressionism is the progression from purely realistic to something completely different. You know, you don't have modern art without that Impressionist phase where suddenly a bunch of people say, hey, we don't have to paint shit like it actually looks.
Yeah.
We can start painting shit like we feel
why I like it the way I appreciate. I appreciate it the way I appreciate Prince. I appreciate that without Prince, there wouldn't be like the Saturday Nights. I appreciate that there's this, that he represents this thing.
You don't deny the talent.
I don't deny the talent, and I don't deny the contribution. Right. But it's not my bag.
Yeah. Sure, and aesthetics is all about what's your bag.
That's,
what do you find beautiful? And you can find a lot of things beautiful.
And that's what made me crazy about this class thing, was because it was like to narrowly define it as saying it has to be created for the express purpose of being beautiful is bullshit.
So how do you define aesthetics then?
Aesthetics, like, okay. Aesthetic beauty?
Because
the word aesthetics is a whole different...
Well, because it can... There's a whole philosophical family of aesthetics.
Aesthetic
Let's
beauty.
Say philosophical beauty.
Okay, so aesthetic beauty. Beauty aesthetic beauty to me is a beauty that... And this is, I'm going to describe this in somewhat hippie terms. It is a beauty that takes your breath away. It is a feeling. It is something that you cannot really define. And it's why that, you know, there's art. They say with art that if you look at it and you think, I have to own that, then that's for you. My mom had this happen to her, actually at the Renaissance Festival 2 years ago. She walked into Kevin Caulfield's shop. She walked in the door, and she will describe it as almost like a religious experience, because for her, there was no other piece in this entire shop except for the vase
saw. Yeah, I remember that.
And she walked over to it, and she said, I want this. And I'm like, it's really nice. You should look. And she goes, no, I want this. How much is it? And he told her, and it was a lot. And she said, okay, I want this. This is amazing. This is beautiful. And to me, that's aesthetics. It's almost like falling in love. How do you describe what it is to be in love with someone? It just happens to me. And I don't know if that's right or not.
I don't know. Tim,
Yeah. What would you, if you had to define it without looking it up?
Yeah.
Like, what would you think?
Aesthetics?
Aesthetic beauty.
Aesthetic beauty. I think it's anything that you find beautiful for any reason. To me, that's what it is.
Yeah.
When you describe it's
man-made, not man-made.
Something that gives you I think there needs to be some sort of an emotional connection to
okay.
it. It's not, I don't feel aesthetics is simply the ability to stand and appreciate a piece. You have to emotionally invest in something to really feel that it's aesthetically beautiful. I can appreciate lots of art. There is not yes. a lot of art that I look at and I become emotionally connected to it. And I'm like, holy...
So, like you want to look at it because it's so pretty. You just right. want to keep looking
so
at it.
So right. then the three of us would agree that aesthetics or aesthetic beauty is purely subjective.
Subjective and personal.
And personal. Yeah. Okay.
I think so too.
So,
but it could be shared.
Okay.
It's not like just one and on one. Like you can appreciate, you can together yeah. appreciate something.
It can stir emotions in multiple people. And it's not just visual. People.
Audio, yeah, like sure. like hearing someone talk.
It can stir negative emotions, sure. as well as positive.
Sure.
Yes. Okay. It can make you upset or okay. agitated. It's an emotional connection. Yeah.
I agree with all this. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree. I just... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The art we own, the art we have in our house is a friend of ours, Pavel. He was the groomsman in our wedding. And he's an artist. He's a sculptor. Mm-hmm. He's a painter. And he hammered out some... canvases and stretched them and painted some paintings for us. And it's, I guess you'd say it's pop art.
It's pop art, but it's visually striking and everyone who sees it comments on it because it's cool.
It's funny and cute more than anything. We'll take a picture of it.
I have a lot of art in my house and it's all art that for whatever reason I looked at and saw, wow,
yep.
that really... makes an impression on me.
Well, you have Chris Jones art. You have a lot of comic yeah. art.
But sure. You also have a lot of fantasy art.
Yeah. And I have modern art.
And yeah.
I have
yep.
pop art.
In the room we're in now, there's at least four pieces of art.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
our fabulous studio.
In yep. the fabulous basement studio. Yeah.
I feel that, and I think what really bothered me that day, and I was only 18, and I don't want to say that I'm not much different than I was at 18, but some things don't change. And one of them was it was unfair. And I don't like unfairness.
Yeah.
And it bothered me because it was an imprecise definition in the sense that it was too precise, and therefore it was imprecise. Because
He was being totally objective about something that's totally
yes,
subjective.
He was. And not only that, but he was being objective in the wrong direction.
Yeah, right.
Like, I could understand if you want to say that objectively, like, all paintings are aesthetic beauty. Okay, like, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to get up. We're not bringing in the thing we think is not an example of aesthetic beauty. And what really bothered me especially, I think, was this was the reflective woman. This was supposed to be a softball, come to college, learn how to be in college.
Is your professor for the reflective woman a dude?
Yes.
That's fucking hilarious.
Yes.
So messed up.
Of course. And so I also went to a college preparatory school. I went there from second grade to senior year knowing I was going to college and getting ready for it and taking college-level classes starting in about 8th, 9th grade. So I understood that this wasn't for me. This class was just a prerequisite that I needed to get through and I was going to give it my all. But the
and
point
you know
was,
what that meant.
It wasn't for me. I got an A in that class that making shit up. I mean, it was when I was a senior later.
Yeah.
But like this girl here is from who knows where and she's pouring her heart out. And this to her means something and you're going to shit
just
on
like,
it.
F. It's like you're being a dick.
Yeah.
You're being a dick, and you're being a dick because you've got power.
We don't
over
even.
Her.
Yeah, yeah. We don't even need to deconstruct this from a feminist angle and go to the town on all the things that are wrong with a man teaching the reflective woman and telling a girl she gets an F for her opinion.
Right.
Like we don't even.
Yeah,
need,
we don't need
like
to do
that so much.
That's a totally different podcast. All
yeah.
right. I think we got to cool down.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool
I'm chilling
down.
Out. It's been a long time. It's been a
we
long
gotta
time.
Cool down. We need to go to the five questions.
Yeah.
Nice. So our five questions, I am the keeper of five questions.
You are the keeper
and,
of five questions.
And we are going to way in the past because, guys, just so you know, we're far behind. And we are answering the questions from Mark Everhart.
And there is a reason that we've been we're a little even further behind on Mark, which we'll get to
yes.
in a little bit.
Yes, we will get to that. Mark had a special request of us, and we met it. So I will be Mark. And
okay.
I will do my best Mark voice
do your
here.
Best Mark
yes.
voice.
Mark. And so you guys
it needs to sound like it has more beard.
More beard. Hold on.
Okay.
More beard.
That's
I don't know.
Better.
That sounded great on the radio.
It
that
did.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So should I read the first question?
Do it.
The first, yeah, go
yeah,
for it.
Right, Mark, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
I've seen a few really good ones. Good documentary called Ai Weiwei. Never Sorry, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, but I think I enjoyed Looper the best.
Uh-huh.
There were a few flaws, but overall I thought it was a hugely entertaining mid-budget sci-fi movie, which isn't something you hear too often these days. I'm a huge fan of Rian Johnson. Both Brick and Brothers Bloom are great movies, and I think he certainly continued with Looper. I'm sorry, it's Rian Johnson. Yeah. I just realized it's that guy. I was just reading.
It's R-I-A-N.
Yeah, it's R-I-A-N, Rian. Emily Blunt was a nice surprise, and the couple scene with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis together were memorable.
Oh, in that cafe.
Yeah.
Overall, I was just really entertained, and it vastly exceeded my expectations.
I love Looper.
Yeah, I did too.
Totally, we wouldn't describe it as a something mid-budget sci-fi. It was...
You described it as a hugely entertaining mid-budget sci-fi movie.
That's perfect description for Looper.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was. It wasn't... I mean, I like Brick better, but they're two different.
Oh,
I mean,
they're super so different. Yeah.
They're not in the same neighborhood at all.
No.
And I haven't seen Brothers Bloom yet. It's on my Amazon wish list. I'll get it eventually someday, but...
It set rules and it stuck to them. And whether or not I think the biggest flaws anybody can have with a problem anybody can have with that movie is if they have a problem with the time travel conceit.
Some people had a problem. Yeah. They felt distracted by the way Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face was changed to look like Bruce
Willis. The prosthetics were fucking one of my favorite parts.
They were amazing.
If you'd never seen him in any other movie, you wouldn't have noticed.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. You have to suspend your disbelief because...
I'm not there to... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, you know what the actor looks like at the Golden Globes. You need to pretend that they're someone else. It's the whole fucking point of a movie.
I'm not there to see an actor. I'm there to see the character they're playing.
Yes, exactly.
And, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think, is one of the best actors working in movies right now.
He's the new Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
Period.
Bam.
Yeah. He's amazing.
He is.
Man needs to be in a musical.
Hugh Jackman might give him a run for his money.
Hugh Jackman can't dance like Joseph Gordon-Levitt can dance. He can't.
Okay.
You remember that SNL where he's doing the wall flips and the tap dancing?
Yeah,
he's amazing.
That's true. Good.
Yeah. All right.
But that makes him the new Donald O'Connor. Anyway.
The second question. Who is your favorite atheist character?
I had a pretty hard time with this one. Not sure if this has been chosen before, but Andrew Ryan from BioShock is a pretty awesome character from a video game series that I love. Between the opening sequence, the very first banner you come across that says, no gods or kings, just man, or hearing somewhere beyond the sea, which still gives me a little bit of the creeps if I hear it, Andrew Ryan is pretty crazy, but he's such a great and entertaining character and bad guy. And that song, he means...
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere...
Yeah.
That
yeah.
song? All right.
The opening,
awesome.
The opening scene to BioShock is one of my favorite. It's maybe, I'm going to say, my second favorite opening scene to a video game of all time.
Is that
a
first-person shooter?
It is.
God damn it.
And
I can't play those.
And it's... You're truly transported to another time and another place. And this Andrew Ryan is... He's kind of an Ayn Rand, man is the greatest power and man can do and you have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps to make this world a better place together type thing. But he's also kind of a criminal mastermind on a scale that's not
is
like...
Is he a brilliant science dick?
He's not all a scientist. Right. Well, I mean...
A brilliant corporate dick?
No, he's more like... His scale of his vision is too grand to be a villain. He's invented a whole...
He's Ozymandias.
Yes.
Right. He's Ozymandias.
Oh, there you go.
He's only a villain because the world doesn't match his vision.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Right. Awesome.
There you go. All right, question number 3. What is your geekiest hobby?
All right, this is Molly real quick. I'm just going to say this is super geeky. All right. This is probably one that you've never heard before, but I am a huge European football fan. Soccer. Yeah. I support a team, Everton, very closely, and almost every weekend I'm down at Brits in the early morning to catch them if they're on TV. I lived over in England for 6 months after college, and one of the main reasons was to see as many soccer matches as I could. I'm just going to say football. I ended up going to only 6. It's one of those things that I do geek out over, and even Brits that would start to talk to me about it were a lot of times like, wow, you know a lot about this for a Yank. More in the traditional nerd vein, I'm a huge, huge reader of The Wheel of Time, and I'm super excited for the final installment to come out in January.
Several months ago.
Yes, several months ago. I've been reading those books since 8th grade, so this has been a long time coming.
All right.
I've been reading those books since I was in college, And that's probably about the same time because Mark Everhart's a lot younger than me.
Yeah, I don't know. The football thing
is awesome. I have long felt that we should say football and American football because there's more of them than us.
Yeah.
And it's stupid that we try to, like...
Which came first?
Football.
Their football.
Their football first.
There's like almost every...
Sorry, American football. Yeah. Get over it.
Almost every country in the world has a team for that. And it's... Yeah. In any event, I think sports nerds... I don't mean sports nerds like you're a jock and you're a little nerdy about sports. I mean nerds who also like sports.
Uh-huh.
Which, it's funny because Mark's twin, Matt, is all about basketball.
He's a super basketball
player.
Like, whoa.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that his twin brother is like, whoa, about another sport.
Yeah.
Only this one you can't use your hands, that one you can't use your feet.
Yeah, I call myself a closeted sports geek because I'm actually a big sports nerd. Mm-hmm. About just about every sport.
And you,
really?
You've talked about baseball before.
I like baseball.
Man.
I love baseball. I love football.
I love sports.
I love tennis. I love golf. I love sports. But I love reading about it. I don't like watching it. I like reading about it afterwards. I like reading about the event. And it becomes much more dramatic. You know, a baseball game is way more dramatic when you don't have to watch the whole fucking game.
What about
game.
Sports movies then? You like sports movies?
Love sports movies.
Okay.
Absolutely love them.
How do you feel about like running? I'm just going to go as wide as...
Oh, no, honey. He said sports.
I'm going to go as wide as possible and say like, that's what I'm asking. Is it competitive sports only? Like the
boxing.
Olympics. Well, the Olympics, obviously.
The Olympics are awesome.
But my
point
being, like, would you ever watch coverage of a marathon?
I don't watch coverage of hardly anything.
Well,
so no, but
okay.
I'm interested to see the results from marathon.
And what about golf?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Again, don't want to watch it. I think it's boring to watch, but I think it's really interesting to read about the results because then it's like they take 18 holes and they boil it down to the 4 holes that were actually important. And
you like the drama of it.
I like the drama of sports.
I don't want to be a lawyer, but I love Law and Order.
I love the drama of sports.
Interesting.
And I love being able to be to watch. I mean, some games, some sports, the drama happens. And one of the reasons I like watching football is because drama does happen within the context of the game in real time. Whereas in baseball, the drama is dragged out over interminable amounts of balls
and
strikes.
And I feel like there's no drama because I am already bored. And I understand the games. Miles Park Academy gives you a well-rounded education, and one of those is I know the rules to every single organized sport because you have to take tests.
Well, no,
there's nothing wrong with not liking sports.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
roller derby?
Sure.
Did you go?
I went once.
Okay.
It was fine.
I don't, you know, that's how
would
I
would you read a roller derby blog?
Sure.
So I know roller derby is a real sport. I fucking hate it. It's boring as shit.
I will say, and this is how much he loves me. He comes to my races, and he stands there, and he gets harassed by the cops because he's a big punk-looking dude in a hoodie. And why are you at the race? You clearly are not running. You know, like, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
But
All right. Back to
number four.
Back to Mark's
answers. Number four. What is your favorite sandwich?
All right, so before I say this and read his answer, we had this sandwich tonight.
We did.
We decided that we needed to try this sandwich because it was so weird. We wanted to taste it ourselves.
And that's why there was the delay, because we kept forgetting to get all the ingredients.
It had
to
be the right time that we could actually do it. So we made this sandwich, and we ate it, and I will read it to you first. All right, this is his answer. I love PBJs like so much.
How many O's?
There are 6 O's.
Right.
I seriously ate them every day of elementary, middle, and high school. Like, every day. When I got to college, I started experimenting. I love fried eggs on burgers, and figured with a breakfast food sort of taste that PBJs have, why not throw an egg on there? So I implore you to try a PBJ with an egg over easy. I toast the bread, have jelly on one side and PB on the other. I usually do 2 fried eggs over easy so the yolk is runny, and then stick that in the middle. The heat melts the PB just enough to get it runny, and then yolk running in that. I think it's pretty good, although I admit it does sound pretty gross. I'm excited to see if other people besides me think it's just horrible or actually pretty tasty. Guys, what do you think?
You know, I did not think it was horrible. I'm not a big PB&J fan.
Right.
Ah.
So...
I'm an advocate of adding an egg to a sandwich.
In general. Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. That an egg is an upgrade to any
egg. Totally. Egg on a burger, fucking delicious.
I bet an egg on a Reuben would eat that.
And I used to only eat fried egg sandwiches. I would just have like toasted bread or even just grilled bread, but bread, fried egg, little Miracle Whip, maybe a slice of American cheese eat that.
Salt and pepper, yeah.
But I love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Sure.
I eat them a lot. I really did love this sandwich. I think that next time I will make it in a way, I might make my egg a little more over medium.
Yeah, they were pretty runny eggs.
Also, I think just in general, we made them in a hurried way. I didn't take my time with it, but
we made the bread. We toasted the bread on a.
We grilled it more than anything because the toaster we didn't want it to get cold.
So I feel like the peanut butter, I would have liked it more if it was chunky because I like chunky peanut butter more than.
I feel like you change this every time we talk about peanut butter.
I always say chunky. I've never said anything but chunky.
I stood in that aisle and I thought to myself, Nick doesn't like chunky. He always likes creamy. I better buy creamy because he will get mad if I buy chunky. How is this changing over in five years of marriage?
It has not changed ever in my entire life.
I'll tell you what, I've always liked creamy. So I don't know that has anything to do with anything.
You're tearing me apart.
So here's the thing. If it was chunky, I feel like the peanut butter wouldn't have been as melty. There would have been a little bit more like concreteness to it. And I think we used grape jelly. And I think maybe cherry.
Strawberry?
Maybe strawberry would have been better. Orange? I loved the sandwich. And
what
I thought
about
it was
orange marmalade?
Yeah, I like orange and egg as
I'm just saying,
as
like
a flavor
it's a breakfasty
kind of
flavor.
Yeah. I really like the sandwich. I think if I were to do this sandwich, I would hybridize this with my sandwich, which is chunky peanut butter and hot sauce for like a Thai peanut thing.
Ooh, there you go.
I would do chunky peanut butter, fried egg, and hot sauce on one side. Mm. And that sounds, I want to go eat
but
one
But I do
right
want
now.
To say no matter what, adding an egg to a sandwich generally always feel like that's a decent choice. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel that we can say that that is gross in any way, shape, or form.
Tuna melt?
No. I'm not a tuna melt fan,
yeah,
so
I don't eat tuna, so.
Are you insane?
All right, let's move on to question five. We've already...
Oh, one more thing about the sandwich. No, one more thing. So I had a beer after the sandwich. I gotta say, worst fucking smelling burps ever. I apologize to my co-host. I've been trying to blow him away from the table. Holy shit, bad burps.
I've been married to you for 5 years. I'm in it. I'm used to it. This is how it is.
Question five. What's the stupidest thing anybody's ever said to you about your atheism?
I actually can't say I've had too many dumb atheist questions just because I'm not super loud about my atheism. I take the stance of never wanting to hear people talk about their religion, so I'm not going to bring up my lack of religion to people. However, it always makes me crazy when people discuss the age of the Earth, and in particular, the Grand Canyon. I went there for the first time a couple of years ago, and when I was living in the Four Corners region, and it's pretty amazeballs, but my dad has a friend who is a very successful, smart dude who honestly thinks that the Grand Canyon was, quote, designed by God in 6 days or whatever. It just baffles me when otherwise intelligent people suspend their otherwise rational thinking into something that doesn't make any sense at all when there's so much scientific geological evidence otherwise.
Yeah. So, have you guys ever been to the Grand Canyon?
I have not.
Holy
My fuck. Biological father took us halfway and then decided he wanted to go back.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen the Grand Canyon.
It is one of those things when you see it, you'll never forget. And speaking of aesthetics, it's like, that is beautiful.
And that could not possibly have been made intentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look at it and you can't think of a way that you look at it and you can recognize the forces that had to make it happen. And you can look at that and go, that doesn't happen by a God making it. I will say when I still believed in God, sort of, when I went to Yosemite Canyon, which is just one of the most amazing places on earth, you know, there's this spot where you drive in and you see this view, and there's a waterfall on one side and there's a waterfall on the other side, and it's the closest thing I ever came to believing that something was designed, because I mean, like, the whole place is like the first light of the morning comes up over Half Dome, which is this amazing gigantic rock, and at the end of the day the last piece of the park that's illuminated is the face of Half Dome. And it's like, you're like, how can this be accidental? And then you sit there and you look and you start to understand the geology. And of course it's accidental. It's a great fucking accident. It's
coincidental,
amazing.
Yeah.
Coincidental,
yeah.
Right.
And the Grand Canyon is like an amazing piece of geological work.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the wonders of the world, isn't it?
It would exist.
Not the man-made wonders.
Natural wonders, yeah.
It would exist whether or not we saw it.
Yes.
That's what gets me, is that kind of thing, like the Half mm-hmm. Dome. That would happen even if no one ever saw it in the history of humanity. If that was in a remote location, unreachable by man, or you know, that would still happen. And that's how I feel. You know, it's not designed.
There's a sunset on Mars that none of us ever see.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it wouldn't be beauty without people there to appreciate it and to attribute that quality to it.
It's still beautiful. We just don't know. That's how I feel.
Because
you don't know. It's Schrodinger's beautiful cat.
There needs to be a person there witnessing it to have an opinion. If nobody has an opinion...
Of course. Well, because if no one can see it, there's no way to know. But my point is, we know about Half Dome.
Yeah.
But my point is, if no one had ever seen it, it would still be beautiful.
Sure.
It would still be happening.
And the Grand Canyon is the same way. And to be able to look at the Grand Canyon and to think, somebody made this, I think shows a considerable amount of disrespect to the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
So, before we go, just real quick, I found a quote from Andrew Ryan from BioShock that I think sums it up very well.
Him being an atheist.
So it's, I chose the impossible. I chose rapture. A city where the artist could not fear the censor, where the scientist would not be bound by the petty morality, where the great would not be constrained by the small, and with the sweat of your brow, rapture can become your city as well.
There you go.
And that sums it up fucking perfectly.
The brass ring, fucker, reach out and grab it.
All sounds perfect, and then something goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Mark Everhart, for giving us your answers. We liked your sandwich.
And for being patient.
Yes. Thank you all for listening to me talk about my college experiences, not the interesting ones.
That's a different podcast.
Girls' school. And thanks again. We've been Geeks Without God. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Share us to your friends. And... thanks a lot.
We'll see you later.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Thanks to Melissa Kershire for our totally sweet logo.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts on geekswithoutgod.com, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
So, what do you do?
Burp, terrible burps, apparently. Oh my God.